rabbi sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I.
Welcome to Radio Free Kanata. This is Kevin Annett, and welcome back after 1 week. Thanks to Brother Bob Marley for that redemption song. And I guess you could call what we're doing here an act of redemption, but it depends on all of you to take part in this. We have no saviors. We are our own saviors. And you can follow our work at kanatarepublic.ca, K-A-N-A-T-A, Kanata. That means our village in the Haudenosaunee language, our communal village, where we all sit around the council fire and make the decisions as equals, nobody over us. That's Kanata, kanatarepublic.ca. And I want to thank all of you for your continued messages of advice, ideas for shows. We're acting on that today, actually. My co-hosts, Dan and Ryan, and I are going to be talking about various themes, kind of background to why the Republic, how we change our thinking, what is the background that led us to this, and what do we need to break from? Those kinds of things we're going to be discussing today. We also are very pleased that as a result of the show, there are a number of different groups, and we're going to talk about this today, people in different cities that are convening what are called people's assemblies, and that these are alternative governments, if you like, at the grassroots. And we're going to be relating some of our talk today to exactly that. So let me welcome both Dan and Ryan. Hi, guys. How are you?
Hey, Kevin.
Hey. It's good to be with you again. And one day in the flesh. I know this is... I know, promises. But it's a challenging time. As a matter of fact, I should mention to listeners, we're over the next couple of weeks, we're doing some kind of retooling and vacationing and stuff I can't say at the moment, but we are, for the next two programs, we're actually going to air reruns. That'll be next Sunday, July 19th and July 26th. The next two shows in July will be reruns of our best shows that are all archived at bbsradio.com/Radio Free Kanata. But on the first Sunday in August, that's August the 2nd, we will be back live with a whole new lineup and some very good shows being planned leading up to the fall, and especially our constitutional convention in Toronto at the end of October. So that's just to remind you. But just because we're not live doesn't mean you can't listen in. As a matter of fact, there's a rich treasure trove of ideas and guests in the archives, and you'll be hearing some of those over the next couple of weeks. So, guys, let me throw out something to both of you. You know, it's I wanted your take on this. A very practical question we always face when we're trying to do something new is the fact that people who we deal with cannot seem to get their minds out of this kind of state of, it's been called learned dependency, where we look to the status quo, whether that's a cop, a benevolent judge, the political system, somebody to help us rather than us doing it for ourselves. So I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, what we think that's rooted in and how we get around it. And I know, Ryan, we have some stuff to bring in historically about, you know, the role of the Vatican and all that too. But let's start kind of like with that whole issue, because I know it's a real question that's in our face really every day. Do either of you have any thoughts on that?
I know I do, but Dan, do you want to start?
Oh, no, you can go ahead first, Ryan.
Okay, well, you know, it's one of those things where you look at one of the easier ways to control somebody in any aspect, from a low level or to a high level of political or religious power, that's through keeping people in some state of fear of losing their job, fear of what other people will think about them. And this kind of gets people to, in a sense, police themselves, where, you know, you go out somewhere and people are worried about what other people are thinking so much that they change their clothes to abide by some social guideline. And, I mean, that's just at a very small communal level. Now, if you expand that to look at a global level and you look at some very big international corporations or some very large institutions such as the Vatican having their hand in different intelligence agencies around the world, and especially in world finances, calling for a world currency, almost as if it's trying to reestablish, and the way that I see it, almost like the Holy Roman Empire trying to reestablish that once again, which is, I think, partially through several different secret I guess you could say, secret society groups or mystery school groups, if you will, what the establishment of the European Union was all about, and this unification of the world under one religion to tighten controls over people so they're easier to kind of keep in line as a sheep herder would a group of sheep, if you will. So having people in a state of perpetual fear, fearing all kinds of things, from fearing the devil to even fearing God, you always hear that, and you can put a fear of God in people. By controlling people in this way through the use of fear, you also have to be able to eliminate other groups of people or other ideologies that would otherwise be disastrous to the control system that you are sort of presenting and to the belief system that you're presenting. And there's a lot of different ways that the conversation could go in terms of what this would be. But if you look at historical forms of genocide, be that genocide in Canada or that be the beginning of the Inquisition, all forms of genocide have been enacted in order to suppress a particular group of people, in order to break them away from their origins, their foundation of their culture, the elimination of their language, and along the way, of course, other things are done, whether people are used for experimentation or whatever the case might be. But in terms of the Inquisition or different forms of genocide, it's done to keep people in line and to eradicate past cultures so that the dominating, occupying people can have stricter controls. And you've seen this throughout countless wars, and you've seen this again, the big one is the Inquisition and what the church has tried to do in order to eliminate all possible threats to their power structure, to the power system. And that's why educating ourselves about history that we can still find factual pieces of information about, we just have to really dig for them. It's not just placed in one book as one absolute truth. We have to search for them through several texts and several authors, right, and historians. But once we find that, we can begin to disestablish the foundational pillars for which these institutions are based on. And by doing that, we can break ourselves away from the chains that have been placed on our perceptions and, in some cases, our own physical bodies. But that's my thoughts.
Yeah. Well, you know, I find it what's interesting, and before I ask Dan for his thoughts, is the way, you know, people, elites rule isn't primarily through repression or by coercion. I mean, it may seem that way, that it's increasing more of that these days, but by and large, it's through the kind of manufactured consent, you know, that's so ingrained. There was a Italian named Antonio Gramsci, and he invented this term hegemony. You know, hegemonic ideas are the ruling ideas in a society, and they're so invisible and so dominant, we don't even know what they are. We just act them out all the time. And this deferring to authority is so ingrained into us. It isn't just because of the way we're raised in families or anything. It's at every level. And the question for me, you know, growing up in a place like Canada, where you didn't have to see police or military on the streets to control people. People control themselves. And that's the thing I really want to get our handle on, about how you get people to wake up to how they're being controlled in a very nice way, like in Canada, right? And any thoughts about that, Dan?
Well, that's something that that's a thought that I constantly ponder myself there, Kevin. That's the biggest problem that we have, is trying to get people to wake up and realize that they are being controlled. People don't even understand that there's that our government's a kakistocracy, right? Like, people don't understand that fact. So basically, it's going to have to be through education and getting people to open their eyes. And once your eyes are open to the fact that you're being controlled, it's so blatant that you can't ignore it anymore. Anytime I walk out in public, anywhere I go, all I see is the different mechanisms of control and the social engineering that's going on around me. And it's a light switch has to flip for people. And once that light switch does flip, you can't see anything but that anymore.
I really, you know, the reason I had Bob Marley kind of introduce us today is that song is so brilliant, because it's kind of like, I've seen in many situations where people are afraid, suddenly there's music and it appeals to a different part of the brain. I noticed this, first time I noticed this, I was a minister visiting old folks in a hospital ward. And these guys, men and women, were in a state of dementia, or some of them had strokes, and they couldn't speak. But we had this kind of hymn sing going on, and as soon as they heard these old hymns, they started singing, even though they couldn't speak. And you realize, you know, the music, the capacity to sing is a different part of the brain, a less controllable part of the brain. And somehow, you know, it was once thought that human beings actually learned to sing before they could speak. It was that kind of intonation that really appeals to a different part of us and lifts us above that kind of control. And, you know, I really think that that's why it's often a good practice at any of our meetings, public meetings, whatever, always begin with song. It doesn't just lift our spirits, it puts us on a different level. And that's kind of one, I think, way we can break that control over our, over us.
Well, absolutely. And as a matter of fact, if you look just at mainline psychology and the idea of the fight or flight reaction, when someone is in a position where they are threatened, when they are in a state of fear, they either run or they stand up and face their fear. And most people today choose the subconscious path of just running away from it and ignoring it and thinking that ignorance is bliss and not having to deal with it. Because, you know, you can let other people deal with it. You can let, you know, the local authorities deal with it. You can let the federal government deal with it. You can let regulatory bodies deal with it. And since people have been so brainwashed and conditioned through the education system, you know, first of all, they think that the education system is established to educate them when all that the education they're getting is a type of state-run religious doctrine. And that doctrine is something that has been constructed in order to eliminate all aspects of history, that such as what they're trying to do in the United States now is eliminate what they call negative history. So they're going to eliminate the history books, aspects of the American Revolution, the Civil War, you know, all of these events that are so, so important to history, not just in America, but across the world. And they're trying to eliminate that. Did you guys hear about that?
No, not at all. But that's not, I'm not surprised. Negative.
Is that part of controlling?
How does
is that part of the common curriculum?
Sorry, go ahead.
I'm not sure if it's part of Common Core specifically. I just know that there were certain senators. There was a senator in, I think it was Colorado, who proposed a bill for this. So I think it's independent legislation that's being passed alongside of Common Core.
Oh, yeah, that's amazing. I've never heard of that before.
It sounds like something the Canadian government would do, because the word, the N word is not, negative is not a nice word in Canada, just like controversy, right?
Well, that's like right. Here in Canada, we have a child behind ruling in our school systems, and all it does is leave every child behind, so.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and what they do is, you know, you get kids at a very young age, you know, you get, like specifically if you look at the drug industry, you get these kids when they're, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old. You have parents who maybe first-time parents, they're a little bit, you know, nervous. They don't know what to do, so they rely on the doctors, the experts, who then push a drug on the child, saying that, you know, normal childhood behavior is considered a disease. You know, acting up in class is considered a mental illness. You know, running around the playground and screaming is considered an illness. So you put the kid on drugs, and then by the time this kid is somewhat relatively aware of what's going on in the world, they think that they can't live without these drugs. So they've been targeted from a very young age, and they get very, very, I guess, shackled at such a young age that they're essentially a slave to that industry for the rest of their lives. And, I mean, you couple that with hundreds and hundreds of years of, thousands of years for that matter, of information that's just been completely eradicated from history, and it just it creates a culture that has no clue where they came from. And therefore, if you have no clue where you came from, it allows the controlling oligarchy to give you whatever version of history they want, and that's really the foundation for the control system we have all over the world.
Yeah, another disturbing thing that seems to be really being eliminated is not just memory, which of course you do in any genocidal system. You've got to wipe out people's memory of who they are, but it's also imagination. I saw a really disturbing thing where a psychologist was interviewing just a few months ago. He was in a kindergarten class in Manhattan, and he was asking the kids who were there, they were 5, 6 years old, how many of them daydreamed? And none of them knew what he was talking about. They said, what's daydreaming? Because they all have their little iPads and they're plugged into all these technology almost all their waking moments. And what that technology does is shut down the part of the brain that dreams, that imagines, that creates. It's almost like a lobotomizer, because when you chemically or surgically lobotomize somebody, you're detaching part of the corpus callosum in the brain, which interconnects the parts of the brain that allow you to think creatively and invent and imagine things that never have been. That part is, you know, under attack in the next generation. And, you know, this is why what we do needs to be on so many fronts. It isn't just politics. It isn't just spirituality. It's everything. It's like this whole cultural stepping away from what we're in. And this is one of the reasons I like Bob Marley songs.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Kevin, I'm sure you know all about the, if you go back far enough, you remember the P2 Lodge, Freemasonry?
Yep.
Yeah, and how they had essentially a plan to overthrow the Italian government and establish this fascist state. And, you know, most people today would think, oh, it's a crazy conspiracy theory. Well, it's not a conspiracy theory. It was a conspiracy fact. The names of the different members of the group of the lodge were listed there. I mean, it involved the Vatican Bank. It involved the Central Intelligence Agency. People like Henry Kissinger were named. So, you know, when you have little plots like that, that's just kind of, it's kind of like when one of those priests is thrown out to the media and you say, oh, well, look, there's a bad apple there in the bunch of priests who, you know, hurt children. Yeah, it's an entire network of these ideas and these plans that are pushing this one underlying agenda. You know, a lot of people don't realize that when you go back and look at what Adolf Hitler tried to establish in Europe, I can't remember the exact name. It was a really long couple of German words. But he had a plan to unify Europe. The problem was the people that were really in charge of him didn't want him in charge of that. So once Hitler was eliminated and the Nazi regime essentially fell, at least perceptually, what happened was we had the establishment of the European Union anyway, which was his exact plan from the beginning. So you see this underlying theme all across the world of centralization of power, elimination of native languages, cultures, even not even necessarily languages in their entirety, but a simplification of the languages so people don't have a way to communicate with one another, which is just as bad as eliminating the language in and of itself. And by doing that systematically on a very local level and expanding it to a larger level, they've been able to kind of coerce, you know, large, large populations into these kind of mental prison states. And what I think is so unbelievable to people is that it's an underlying agenda that is so inexplicitly complex yet so simple that it just seems like it's impossible that anybody could be that organized to even attempt to do something like that. Well, and I think that might be part of the issue that people can't really wrap their heads around.
Well, here's the thing that I'd like to pose that question, whether in fact it exists. And I'm kind of playing devil's advocate a little bit here because in philosophy, they have a principle called Occam's razor, right? And Occam's razor said the simplest explanation is always more likely to be the truest one. And when you look at the nature of the global economic system we live under, it's cutthroat. It's dog eat dog. It's elites, you know, eviscerating each other for their short-term profit. So my question is, and I'm just putting this out there generally, what's more likely, that these elites are actually a unified body imposing this on the human race, or that any elite needs to create the impression that they have that unlimited power to keep everybody in line? Because, in fact, when you look at the way these elites operate, it is not with the kind of power that we assume they have. People on the bottom always assume the people on top always are more powerful than they actually are. And as soon as the bottom starts shaking, you see how transparent that power is on the top. You know, I think a lot of the stuff that people put out as, you know, and, you know, read all these theories about, you know, how we are being messed up by this global elite. The real question is, okay, like Noam Chomsky used to say, where's the evidence? Let's look at the hard evidence that this is actually going on. And I'm not doubting what you're saying, Ryan, but what I'm saying is, we also have to realize that they need us to be thinking along those lines, because that's how they keep us in line. That's how they keep that base stem part of the brain working, on the basis of fear rather than rational thought and all the other things. So anyway, just throwing that out.
That's basically what I said to start, is that it's a matter of fear. It's an aspect of fear. And I don't think it's even a disagreement. I completely agree with you. I mean, it's a little bit of both. I mean, these people really do have an immense amount of power, some of them, but a lot of that power can be very easily disestablished by the people, and therefore they have to keep up this image that they're more powerful than they really are.
Right.
So it's a little bit of a combination of both.
I've had an example of that. I wanted to mention something very related to that, but Dan, jump in anytime if you've got any thoughts.
Alrighty. I actually have a little blurb I'd like to read out over the air once you guys are finished this conversation topic.
Go ahead.
Okay, so this is something that I stumbled across, and I think it really sheds a lot of light on what we talk about all the time here, so I'm just going to start reading it off here. It's called Maintaining a Maintaining a Kakistocracy. One of the reasons for the intimate association of a power elite with child abuse is that they might use it to maintain their power in a somewhat hidden kakistocracy, which is defined as government by the worst and most evil people, a highly capable kind of psychopath, if you like. Psychopathy is only mildly hereditary, so an elite psychopath cannot guarantee that sons or daughters will be just as psychopathic as themselves. I expect this entails that they need a steady resupply of ruthless and power-hungry individuals who understand the world deeply and pervasively, and as such are highly capable. Normally, deep and pervasive understanding leads to wisdom, but a sense of responsibility, humility even. But that is precisely not what the kakistocracy needs. It needs the same depths of pervasiveness and understanding, but in a combination with utter ruthlessness and the capacity to appear respectable. Enter child abuse. By abusing children, you give them the attachment an attachment disorder by violating or destroying the deep sense of security that is the basis for an open attitude towards learning and discovering. With this trust violated, the child's world changes from a world of opportunities to a world of potential and actual threats. And often they will search and serve those who can protect them from these threats, and in doing so, giving their autonomy away for life. And they might even carry it over to their children's solidifying their growth towards autonomy. Aristocrats and priests must have discovered this a long time ago, that abused children lead to useful adult servants, slaves actually. And while this is despicable to most people with a normal moral development, this is a positive thing for psychopaths who see other people as fools anyways. Yet this does not solve the problem of keeping that kakistocracy supplied with respectable appearing super high functioning and completely ruthless psychopaths. Only a small faction of the population, say 1%, is a psychopath. And as such, the benefit of the absence of empathy and conscience. Psychopaths are able to exploit others as if they were tools. Yet the vast majority of them are not particularly evil. They can be ruthless, daring, and callous, but they find mostly normal, law-abiding ways to be psychopathic. They might be mountaineers, military, ER doctors, car insurance salesmen, real estate brokers, or white-collared criminals. But most are definitely not high-functioning individuals to compare to how the power elite see themselves and would accept as their peers. So how do you recruit suitable psychopaths in your midst if they do not advertise themselves as such? Enter the child abuse again. If you organize events for an ambitious and capable in which they progressively can show that notwithstanding their veneer of respectability, that they are actually completely ruthless, you have the ideal recruiting grounds for the kakistocracy. Of course, blackmail plays a role, but the suitable candidates gladly let themselves to be blackmailable because it gives them access to their inner sanctum of the kakistocracy. They prove themselves worthy members and loyal due to their blackmail ability. In return, they will receive access to a power in a way they can never dream of on their own. After a while, they become fully accepted at a level that suits their capabilities, and they will help maintain that system to give them gave them so many opportunities. I think that this about sketches up what we've been talking about. I think it's
very good. Thank you. Thanks, Dan.
Hey, no problem.
And you know, I mean, I wanted to add a couple of things. One, I wanted to touch on Occam's razor that you mentioned, Kevin, and also I wanted to say that, you know, for all of us, all the listeners out there as well, you know, thinking about the people that have a lot of power, not that they're necessarily psychopaths, but if you think about some of the banking cartels and you follow the history of banking back to its origins and you look at like how the Knights Templar actually started loaning large sums of money out and charging interest for it, and you see this, you see this trend that kind of develops, and you understand that if you look back and you understand the origins of where all of this came from, these people have so much wealth that people like us can't even begin to imagine it, even with our imaginations that haven't been kind of stomped out. I mean, to us, if we got a couple $1 million, that would maybe be like so much money we wouldn't even know what to do with it. These people don't have a couple million. they don't have a couple billion. They don't even have a couple trillion. These people have so many hundreds of trillions of dollars, they don't even deal in money. They deal in the reestablishment of nations. They deal in the placing of kings and queens and monarchs and presidents and prime ministers. It's not even a matter of finances to these people. The money is a way to control other people. So we have to understand that these people have so much power because of the system that they've implemented, and we can't necessarily begin to even think on the level that they are, because they live in a completely different kind of world and mindset than we do.
There's an example. There's an example. Oh, go ahead. Sorry. Well, whenever I'm in the States and I'm talking to people, it's really amazing because in America, the recent statistics came out that 60% of the population, that's almost two-thirds of Americans, live on 2% of the income. I mean, it's out-and-out feudalism, okay? And one family, the one that owns Walmart, one family has more money than 40 million Americans. I mean, like, this is out-and-out pauperism. And yet you talk to most Americans, and the things there, what is the one thing that so many poor Americans are afraid of? Socialism. Because they turn on CNN, and it's all hyped up about how you can't have socialism because then the government will run everything and take all your money. Well, I mean, and the hysteria about Obama and all the so-called Obamacare and this. I mean, it's amazing how, and this is what I want to get at, because it relates to what we're going to talk about now in the second half, which is what we can do about all this and what we are doing about all this, how you approach ordinary people and deprogram them from identifying with a system that is so obviously based on stealing from them, robbing them and killing them as if they're cattle in a pen, right? And sending their sons off to fight their wars to keep their wealth. You know, that's the question I want to put out there. How in practice, not just in theory, but in practice, we got to provide an alternative for people that they see can work. And this is why this idea of the People's Assemblies is such a neat idea. And I'd like to kind of talk about that in the second half. But anyway, thoughts on that?
Dan, do you have any thoughts?
I guess my thoughts would be along the lines of you, Kevin. I really have been enjoying our conversations we've been having about setting up these public forums for people to get together and speak. And I think that just getting out and meeting with other like-minded people in your community who are awake and aware as to what's going on and contemplating different ways that you guys can all work together to take back your the power of the people, right? Like,
right.
That's the thing. We need to look at the way that our government functions and see that it's completely corrupt and illegitimate, and hence we need to go back to natural law and start enforcing the law in our own communities through these public forums, sort of a citizen's grand jury, you could call it, I guess. And just people need to realize that the power lies with us. There's a lot more of us than there is of them, and they are pretty well aware of that fact, that if we actually rose up and everybody rose up, we could take them down in a matter of weeks.
And by rising up, here's one example of what we're talking about, just to build on what Dan's saying. Under common law, and this goes right back to Magna Carta, which, by the way, didn't give us rights. It recognized what we already had. We're born with these rights. No government gives them to us. That's number one. And based on those natural rights, we have the right to convene our own assemblies, our own courts. And one of the ideas that people are acting on, and this is beginning to happen, there's already groups that are going to be doing this in Ottawa, throughout Ontario, London, Kitchener, and Winnipeg, is pull people together in a community, start talking about the kinds of things they want happening in the communities. For example, the woman in Winnipeg, who actually was on the air with us last week, Debbie, she's been talking to her neighbors, and they said, look, why don't we just keep our money in our community, put it in our own bank account, and start using that money to build the services we want in our communities, like open our own daycare centers, fix up the neighborhood, get the drug dealers out, keep the money and the tax money in the community. And the people's assemblies are the ways to lawfully legitimate that. Because what you do, and we've talked about doing this in Ontario too, you even go to the local town council and the mayor, and you say, look, you got to sever ties from this corrupt system and from the crown, which is an indicted, convicted criminal body anyway, and let's work out a way to start having local autonomy so that we can build it up. Now, once you start doing that and people can think, hey, I can do something, that's when the mental control starts slackening, because people are not going to change. And this is the thing about human beings. People will not change until they see something else that can work. They can be a fine idea, but unless they see it operating, it's just an idea. And they're not going to risk over an idea only. They're also going to risk when they see something they can defend. So this is why we're putting that idea of the People's Assembly out there. And we're putting that out. There's going to be a discussion of this at CanadaRepublic.ca, ITCCS.org, leading up to the fall when, again, these assemblies will be electing delegates to the Constitutional Convention in Toronto. So I want to put that out as kind of a practical hook we can hang this discussion on, is things that people, especially the listeners and the members of the Republic across Canada, this is something you need to be doing right away. And we've got a little handbook about that. Write to us, republicofcanada@gmail.com, and we can get that going in your community. Ryan, go ahead. I know you had stuff to say.
Yeah, I've got a bunch of thoughts. First of all, I want to agree with both of you on what you said, whether it's keeping money in local communities or it's just simply getting out there. And this is always kind of my answer to those questions, is getting out there and talking to other people that are somewhat like-minded, because you'll find that there's a lot of people in your communities, probably right in the neighborhood you live in, who know exactly what you know, and they're just sort of afraid to talk about it because of what other people will think of them. Give people kind of an open forum to be able to discuss these items, whether it's hanging flyers up, handing out cards, not protesting, but handing out pamphlets. Eventually, you kind of hit a critical mass. And as you hit a critical mass, there's a lot of people that might mock you and might laugh at you. Eventually, they see that you're right, or at least on the right path. And as they see that, people begin to kind of break away from that fear, seeing that, well, the people over there, they're not afraid anymore. And that whole system that's been constructed to keep people in a mental prison of what's everybody else going to think, it sort of turns that system around on the system that implemented that control structure. Because now once people see, hey, there's something I can do about this, everybody else is on it, I should do it too, it kind of builds that fight that we can bring back to the system. And I find it interesting, if you look historically, you hear about revolutions and you hear about, overthrowing of different governments. I think right now we are really on the precipice. It's going to be probably long, long, long after I'm gone that we will see a type of global revolution. We've seen revolutions for specific nation states. We've seen revolutions for large, large countries. But what we're seeing now is the unification of the entire world, the European Union, the Trans-Pacific Partnership that was just signed, Canada, Mexico, the United States essentially dissolved under NAFTA. Everything still operates in image. Everything still operates in name. But when you look at the bigger picture, the entire world has essentially been unified at one time under one specific control. And yeah, there's other little minions running around claiming that I control this, I control that. But since the world has essentially been unified in this manner, eventually you will see that I think what we are on and what we are doing right now, we are essentially, in a way, and I mean all the listeners out there too, so this isn't just me, Dan, and Kevin, this is sort of like the founding fathers of a global revolution, and that's what this will eventually lead to, because eventually people will see through the ruse. Eventually the police brutality gets to the point where it's not a matter of is it happening, it's a matter of you see it every time you go out of your house. It gets to a point where the Gestapo are on your front doorstep, whether you did something wrong or not, and that is the point where everybody past the critical mass wakes up, sees what's happening, and chooses to make a decision that they're not going to have it anymore.
I saw a great photo somebody sent me from Europe, and it showed, and it did, I don't think it was a fake picture because I remember reading about this incident. There was a big protest, many tens of thousands of people, and the riot police were taking part in it. They'd taken their helmets off, and they were walking with the crowd. They had joined the crowd.
I've seen that.
And, yes, and that happens. The thing to realize is that, and here's another example of how I've seen it happen. I've given the example of how the police kind of stood back when we were occupying the cathedrals in Vancouver. But there was another time many years ago when I first started working in the downtown part of Vancouver as a street minister, over 20 years ago now. Well, God, it's almost 30 years now. There was this big plot in the downtown area, like a block wide. It was just sitting there vacant. So we began to say to some of the local people, why don't we just dig it up and put in a community garden? And a lot of the middle-class folks in our group said, no, you can't do that. You'll get arrested. I don't want to get in trouble with the police. All the street people said, hell, why not? I mean, what do we have to lose, right? We're getting busted every day. Right. We have nothing to lose. So these guys started digging it up. And that community garden is still there. And 20 plus years later, I keep dating myself here, but anyway, a long time ago when this started, people just went and started doing it. And it created a momentum in which eventually the cops used to come by and ask us if they needed, if we needed help. And, you know, if they wanted to be part of it because it was something very real. We were feeding the community. We started growing food there. And, you know, when you start those direct grassroots initiatives, it creates like a counterweight. You know, what you're saying, Ryan, about this kind of global agenda, globalist agenda of corporatism where they're trying to create one big machine for the whole planet. Every time that happens in history, you get a counter momentum starting in the opposite direction of people decentralizing and taking back power locally. And that's what we see all over the place. Every time I go and speak somewhere, I see it happening. But people, minds aren't plugged into that because they're on the internet and all they see is the other thing. And we need to experience that in our local communities. So this is another reason why we've got to get active locally with all of this stuff.
Oh, exactly, Kevin. And as a matter of fact, what I was going to say about Occam's razor, you know, the definition is basically that whatever the simplest explanation is, that's the most likely and truthful explanation. But I think there's a lot of assumptions that goes on with that philosophical idea. Assuming that something's the simplest explanation does not necessarily mean that it's the correct information that you have to present that fact. And what I mean by that is, you know, you can look, for example, if you look at, and this is a great example actually that goes along with what you just said about the garden. If you look at global food production, there are about 10 companies that literally control all food production for the entire planet. 10
Yes.
companies. Which means that these 10 companies interlock with one another. The 10 CEOs, 10 men essentially control food distribution for the entire planet. And that's kind of difficult to maybe understand. That's a fact that you'll see in Bloomberg, Wall Street Journal, and all the rest. So when you look at these companies, not that there's an underlying agenda or a conspiracy or anything like that, but what you find is that these companies have been providing, you know, the cheapest foods, chemicals and all this other garbage we know about, GMOs and whatnot. And as people begin to become aware of what's going on in the world, their aim shifts from thinking that, oh, the easiest explanation is that these people just want to make a lot of money, and that's the easiest explanation. It's not a matter of any type of conspiracy. But when you play it back and look at every aspect of what's actually been established, you can see, first of all, an underlying theme of eugenics going from vaccines to food to water to the environment and all the rest. But putting that to the side, you can see that when people realize what's actually happening, and they have realized what's actually happening specifically with food, because that's something that affects everybody every day, you've seen these large corporations, multinational corporations, guys, that have stopped dead in their tracks. They've realized what people want. And you've had the head of Yum Brands Food, which, for example, they own KFC and Taco Bell. And you've had the CEO of Campbell's Soup. Both of them have said, we realize, and I'm paraphrasing here, we realize people want a real food experience and they don't trust multinational corporations to provide that to them. That's why they're going for alternative organic foods and whatnot. So simply by people waking up and making a decision at the supermarket of what they want to buy and eat, people in local communities on a global scale, not working together essentially, have affected the 10 largest multinational corporations on the planet who have had to try to rebrand their entire image because a few people stood up and said, we're not eating that garbage anymore. We want something else.
Well, I guess the question is, it just to change an image, or are they substantively changing what they're doing? Because, you know, it's easy, you know, greenwashing, as they call it. The corporations have been doing greenwashing for many years. They try to improve environmental and everything. In America, in Canada, we call it redwashing because, you know, when the native leaders get on board and say, yeah, it's good to have oil sands exploration and cut down those trees, it creates jobs for our people. They're adept at doing that, at co-opting the sentiment from below. That's what any ruler does all the time. So I think the question is, we don't even need these people. Walk away from their corporate system. To hell with these CEOs and presidents and systems. Do it ourselves. That's our whole philosophy.
I absolutely agree with you 100%. And on what you just said there, I think we can add that whether they're changing, you know, the actual, you know, product or whatnot, I go along the lines from my research of understanding that they really don't. I mean, you get companies that claim, you know, some companies claim, oh, we're taking MSG out of food, and then they put an autolyzed yeast extract, which is MSG. So, yeah, they change the image, but the fact and the point that I'm trying to make is that whether it's an image change and they don't really actually change the product, it's still people that have made a difference because of their decisions and their talking and the protests and whatever that have at least, even if it's a surface change, have done something to get these companies to take realization that people want a change. That's the point that I'm trying to make.
I guess we have got to just get people to look at themselves and their own ability. And this is what we keep coming back to all the time. And, with Kanata, that we have this membership right now that's very passive. We have on record over 1,000 people who have signed up with Republic. And I would say 95% of them are sitting there waiting for somebody to say, okay, here it is now, people, you can join this. And it's this mental lethargy and the sense of powerlessness. I can't do anything. It's very rare that we meet somebody who says, okay, we've got your stuff. We're handing it out door to door. We're holding a meeting. Now come on and see what we're doing. You rarely hear people doing that. And it's kind of like you're dealing with people that are still largely asleep. Now, your thoughts about how we wake them up.
Well, I guess, it's going to have to be through action. You know, it's like the simplest tasks that we could all do to stop this government in its tracks. They're just the simplest steps that we stop voting, stop paying taxes, stop using our social insurance numbers, stop taking benefits from our government, stop working for the government, stop registering our property, and stop using the police to resolve our disputes, and throw our driver's licenses and license plates and registration in the trash. Like, they'd be done in a matter of weeks if people just took that step. It's the simplest tasks that we have to do to put this government in check. And just, it's getting people to the point where they want to do it. We almost need to make it a fad and fashionable in some sort of way so that the sheep want to jump on and do it too, right? We have such simple steps to get this stuff done, and I just don't understand why people just can't put that next foot in front of them. They know the stuff. They know what they can do. They know everything's wrong, but yet people, for some reason, just don't want to take that next step.
Right. Well, they don't see it. It's like a step to some degree. It's a step into the void. That's true. They haven't ever in their life. I mean, the practical question is, when has anyone ever experienced democracy, real democracy in their life, real self-government? They never have. Have you ever experienced it? Being raised in a family, in school, on the work site, in a church? I mean, forget it. So they don't know what we're talking about when we say self-government. We have to show them what it is. And, I found it very interesting looking historically. And we hear these incidents about, like, in the American Revolution, where the British are marching along the road and everybody from the grandfather down to the little kid is chucking things at them and taking shots at them. And, like, why did that happen? Those people, 99% of them lived on their own farms. They already were experiencing the liberty of nature. They had their own power. They weren't city dwellers. I mean, 98% of Americans lived in small towns or in the country. And they saw that being threatened, whereas now we're in the inverse situation. People are raised as drones in a city where they're dependent on everything and everyone else. So we have to reteach people freedom. And, I think one final thing I want to throw out and for your comments is one of the things we've got to be doing, going back to the community garden model in Vancouver, is wherever there's a vacant piece of land, our people's assemblies are got to go and seize it and say, this is now under common law jurisdiction, and invite people in to take and start living and growing things on that land. When we get people back onto their own controllable turf, that's when you're going to see people wake up, because in the city, you're atomized. There's no place to stand. And, I think it's often that simple. Your thoughts on that? We've got about 5 minutes left.
Hey, do you have any thoughts first?
Oh, no, you can go ahead, Ryan.
Okay, I was just going to definitely agree with you, Kevin, and I think that more and more people need to come together in local communities and do that, because it has to start at a local, I guess you could say grassroots type of a movement. It has to start at a local level. It's not something where you just flip a light switch and all of a sudden the light just flickers on. It's something that takes a long time to break away from these past mindsets and to understand that, the actions that we take and the movement that we're involved with are only illegal in the sense that it offends in an authoritative way the power structure that's been established. It's not illegal in any type of immoral way or unethical way. I mean, planting a garden is something that everybody should do, but does that mean that you should be arrested for it? And the only reason they have these laws in Florida, in the United States, where if you plant a garden, the police will come to you. This one guy, they beat this guy in his front yard because he planted a garden. They had him remove it, and the city fined him so many thousands of dollars. You know, I mean, what kind of a rational person really thinks that that's because this guy might grow a tomato, as the federal government says, and give it to his neighbor, and his neighbor might get sick, like, as if they really care so much about the neighbor's well-being that they don't care about coming and beating the hell out of the guy that's planting the tomatoes. It just doesn't really make any sense. So I definitely think that we have to approach it from a communal level, and when you first get somebody involved in this, you can't approach it, I'll just wrap this up really quick, you can't approach it in a way where you work out of the current understanding of what law or what the legal right. system is. You have to take a blank sheet of paper and you have to restart and reprogram your mind. You have to reprogram everything and you have to delete right. the old operating system. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to run, you know, Windows 8 on a 1998
okay,
computer.
Good.
You have to redo
and,
the whole thing.
Dan, your final comments, and then I'll do a final plug about the upcoming shows. Go ahead, Dan.
I kind of don't got anything right now, Kevin. I'm sorry about that.
No, don't apologize. It's fine. We've had a good conversation. And I want to lead on from this, from what Ryan just said, by saying that in the future educational components of our shows, we're going to talk specifically from the common law training manual and from the sheriff's training manual about what is the common law, how do we put it into practice, how do we convene these courts. You can read that stuff now online, CanadaRepublic.ca, ITCCS.org, but we're going to go into it in detail and also provide with that some practical examples of how people are doing it now in the upcoming shows. So I want to thank you all for tuning in today again. For the next two Sundays, for the rest of July, we'll be playing reruns of the most important shows. Starting Sunday, August 2nd, we'll be back live, Dan and Ryan, myself, and others, other guests, leading up to the very important events in the fall where we're launching these people's assemblies and electing delegates to our constitutional convention in Toronto. And so on behalf of all of us, I want to thank you for tuning in. Follow the work, CanadaRepublic.ca. Write to us, republicofcanada@gmail.com. Most importantly, don't wait for us. You are the Republic. You are the Revolution. Do it now. Stay strong. Stay clear. Bye for now.